Welcome to Worst Year Ever, a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Wow, it's the show. And the name of that show is...
Holy shit.
Yep.
The year.
Holy shit, the year. Welcome to Holy Shit the Year,
yep.
The show where we learn that years happen and are shocked by this because all of us missed the days in school where the basics of linear time were explained. I thought it was a flat circle because my entire education was a single episode of the first season of True Detective.
Mm-hmm. And what an episode it was.
It was a great education.
What a
it taught
long
me most of
time,
I mean.
Long time to wait yeah. until you can get educated slightly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it...
Like it 7 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was not long ago, Cody. I was in my mid-20s. Yeah.
Real indictment of the American education system.
But I did learn to read. Unfortunately, all I can read is cans of Lone Star. But
that's right.
That's really been most of what I've needed. Oh, and I would be sponsored by Lone Star, except for as a Texan, I know that Lone Star is the trash Texas beer and the quality, which doesn't mean I won't drink it, but...
You're not going to advertise for it.
I'll advertise for it. I do not. I have no principles whatsoever. I mean, the only principle we stick to is no brain pills or baldness cures. That's about it. Yeah.
That one's hard and fast. I will go for a non-joke one and say no diet culture ads, please. Thank you. Oof. Turn that down out of the gate.
Yeah, we're getting in trouble with that. Due to a mistake made this week.
Oh, really? Okay.
You know who else is getting in trouble this week internationally? Ooh. Is
Nations?
The Israeli government for carrying out an ethnic cleansing.
There we go.
In Gaza and East Jerusalem and the West Bank.
I'm told they have that right, though. They have the right to ethnic
defend themselves.
Cleanse. Yes.
Yes, to defend themselves.
It's like
from
when
the rockets that can't reach their city.
Yeah. When I crash my lifted FJ cruiser through the gates of my neighbor's house and start firing a rifle into the side of his trailer, if he comes out and throws a rock at me, I have the right to defend myself. That's an assault upon my person. What I was doing prior to that assault is, I would argue, immaterial.
Yeah, it's not that is a form of violence.
More or less the argument Israel's making.
I accept that, no questions asked.
And it's one of those things. I think probably before we get into the nitty-gritty, we can have like a little bigger picture talk about the overall morality of the situation on both sides. And by saying both sides, I'm not making a both sides argument, but
it's
I'm
not
saying
both sides,
no.
right?
Because the death toll is very. I mean, we have a little graphic here. We can go over kind of what the death toll's been in the operation since 2008. Operation Cast Lead, which lasted 23 days, 1,440 Palestinians killed, 5,300 injured, 47,000 houses destroyed or demolished, 13 Israelis killed, 518 injured. In 2012, Operation Pillar of Defense, 167 Palestinians killed, 6 Israelis killed, 1,000 Palestinians injured, 239 Israelis injured, 126 houses destroyed or demolished. And in 2014, 2,100 Palestinians killed, 73 Israelis killed. This is Operation Protective Edge, which lasted 50 days, 11,000 Palestinians injured to 720 Israelis injured, and 20,000 houses destroyed or demolished. So... Well, they're like it's like saying violent. There's violence on both sides is like saying like somebody starts firing into your yard and you throw a rock at him. There is violence on both sides. That is a fact. It's violent to throw a rock. It's violent to fire blindly into someone's house. But the
it's the also
violence
violent
is
to,
not
you know,
proportional.
Kick people out of their houses.
Yes, absolutely. It's
violent to continue to do that. Yeah, it's the disparity is. Very obvious,
staggering,
and
yeah.
And even considering like all the defense systems that are in place to keep that number so low compared to so many things that they don't even have in Gaza, like just the electricity alone, and
what they've been
like
prevented from having, what they've been prevented from,
yeah,
having,
I
through
mean,
blockades,
exactly,
through
exactly,
subjugation, yeah. You know.
Yeah, there's a reason it's often referred to as an open-air prison.
Yeah. One of the things that I think is most telling to me just about the the level of oppression Palestinians live under in Israel in general. Ramallah in the West Bank has more rainfall annually than London. London gets 596 millimeters of rain per year. Ramallah gets 619 millimeters of rain per year. But Palestinians have virtually no access to clean water, some of the worst water quality in the planet, because it's taken from them. And they aren't allowed to build up any kind of meaningful infrastructure because, I don't know, watch 3 minutes of bombing footage, and that will explain to you why they don't have... That will explain part of why there's not adequate water infrastructure. And that's one of the things, like, I think too often, even people who are on this... kind of on the side of Palestinians, when they talk about the violence, will be like, well, these rockets don't compare to the kind of weaponry that Israel has, and the death tolls don't compare. But you're right, Cody, the violence goes so far beyond just Hamas firing rockets, Israel firing missiles. It's a pattern of behavior designed to slowly eliminate the Palestinian population. And most of that does not involve ordnance. Ordnance is one aspect and kind of only on the edge of things. The majority of the ethnic cleansing the Israeli state enters into is logistical.
Yeah.
So what kind of violence does that justify from Palestinians in response? I don't know. I don't have a hard and fast answer for you, but if I'm in the same situation watching my friends and family die, starve, lack, have, you know, no access to COVID medication, no access to vaccinations, barely any access to testing, no clean water, not enough food, no opportunities for the future. Would I feel justified in firing rockets at the people doing that? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. Right. And
people are also absolutely. I
think everybody listening to this show and our other shows know that I've been preoccupied with a lot of family stuff. So I am going to let you guys take lead, but I want to ask some questions, and I have been following. It's awful. But I want... Talk to me about Hamas and the relationship with Palestine and Palestinians, you know, because that's complicated part of this as well.
Yeah, so the gist, and I'm hoping this is... please don't, no one take this as anything but, like, the broadest overview. And I've checked my understanding of this with a Palestinian... colleague, just to kind of make sure I didn't have it completely wrong. In the beginning, sort of the Israeli state coming into being and the Palestinian resistance to that, there was kind of a secular and more left-wing resistance to the occupation, and there was a more religious hardliner resistance to the occupation. And for most of the history of the occupation, the secular and more left-wing, which has kind of been embodied by the PLO, the Fatah Party, Yasser Arafat was kind of one of the... And they had a number of the... And there were different groups, and they kind of were on a scale. So a lot of them were more Marxist in kind of their beliefs, or at least kind of more sympathetic to that. But that was kind of the dominant chunk of the resistance. And that really, the Israeli government saw that as a problem, in part because, number one, there were leftist elements of Israeli culture, of Israeli politics, that could be more sympathetic with what the Palestinians were. And we'd be like, well, we're actually kind of agree with a lot of things. There's ways we can come to an accord. And internationally, it gave the Palestinians a lot more sympathy. Where, I mean, you can, one of the places you can see that is kind of this very long history of deep solidarity between the Irish, which have a strong Marxist and not always socialist might be a better way to claim it, although a lot of those were Marxist, but like a strong left wing anti-colonial militant tradition and a strong tradition of sympathy and even like shared training with Palestinian resistance movements. And so in, like, I think it was like the 60s, 70s, the Israeli government started funding, like giving money to the groups that became Hamas, funding the religious hardliner segments of the resistance.
I did not know
that.
Yeah.
And some of there's a good Intercept article by Mehdi Hassan where he quotes sources within the Israeli government saying, we founded Hamas. We made them happen. And the person I was talking to, the Palestinian, was like, that's, you know, in kind of a fashion she kind of expected from those from Israeli government sources, taking it too far. But it is true that they were doing what the British would do, what all colonial powers do, right? You have a population, you don't want them united in resistance, you foment divisions, you fund whichever side is kind of more controllable. Now, Hamas, and that's, again, I'm not also not trying to be like, I don't like Hamas, but I'm not trying to say like they're a puppet or anything, because I don't think they are. But there was definitely a goal to support them over what were kind of seen as the more internationally sympathetic chunks of the Palestinian resistance by the Israeli government. Hamas has a militant and a political wing. And since 2006, they have taken control of public services and ministries in Gaza. They were initially elected. They have not been reelected since because, as it was described to me, the Palestinian political system has been frozen in place since 2006. They have not been able to elect any of their leadership since. So they control a lot of social. They're like Hezbollah in a way, in that like Hezbollah over in Lebanon is a militant group, a militia, a terrorist group. They do all that stuff. They also run hospitals and schools and stuff. And that's because if you're trying to do the kind of shit that Hezbollah is doing, trying to do the kind of shit Hamas is doing, one of the things that gets the people on your side is you provide them with social services. And some of that is cold-blooded realpolitik. Some of it is, well, we live here and these are our family members. And like, it's not, I'm really not trying to like be overly simplify.
No, it's just, yeah, it's very broad. There's lots of aspects to this about what this relationship is between Hamas and Palestinians.
Yeah.
But it does all tie back to what this oppression has been like for so long. And I think that this is an element. I bring this up mostly because I feel like it's missing from a lot of the conversations about this. Just a little bit more of insight about what's been happening and how it got there.
Yeah, and if you look at even just sort of the Palestinian like opinion of Hamas and their support of various attacks and things like that, it can be relatively low. But then you have an instance where so we referenced the deadliest numbers from Operation Protective Edge 2014. Mm-hmm. Support for Hamas was declining at a certain point, and then this thing happened in 2014, and support for them grew. Mm-hmm. And that probably has something to do with the fact that you're living in this place and you have this bloody conflict, and who is the only entity that's like protecting you in any sort of way?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, it makes sense that there would be growing support for what you might see as like literally the only thing between you and death, right?
The only option.
Yeah, it's like if I am firing blindly into the side of my neighbor's house after driving my FJ Cruiser through their fence, their neighbor, a convicted sex offender, runs over with body armor to give them, to protect them from my blind fire. They may not like that neighbor, but in the moment, he's offering them the only kind of assistance they're going to get because I've cut their phone lines. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's hard to, like, don't want to, like, simplify it too much, but, like, like if you take the situation and remove it from any sort of like context that we know or emotional feelings or anything like that, and you rename them, you rename every like each faction, and you just look at it and the disparity going on and the situation being dealt with, it seems much simpler.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I just think ethnic cleansing is bad.
I too think ethnic cleansing is bad, and I do think. One of the things that gets talked a lot about this is the complexity of the situation, which you just touched on a little. And we have an episode of Behind the Bastards coming out that touches on this a little bit next week. But kind of one of the conversations I was having there is, I think there's two sides of the this is such a complex issue thing. There's the kind of bad faith actor side, which is basically like if you and I this one reason I hadn't covered it more is that times when I would speak up, I would get screamed at by like all these squads of Israelis and stuff online who would point out things that like I just hadn't prepared for, things I didn't know, and be like, what about this? What about this? And it's like, well, I don't know. I'm not enmeshed in the politics of the region. And it's the same thing like you'll see when you talk about Rojava with Turkish folks on the internet. I'm just better versed in that situation. And that's one of those things that if you're well-meaning, but you're not well versed in the situation coming into this, you can get overwhelmed with all of these counter arguments that are based on data you don't have at your hand. Mm-hmm. And that can make you not reticent to weigh in on the topic. The bad faith actor side of this is people who don't want anyone to talk about it and argue like, well, you shouldn't talk about it if you don't understand. And then they'll list all of these different historical things that you don't need to understand to know ethnic cleansing going on bad, right? Yep. Which is what you need to know right now. it's true, it is an incredibly complicated conflict in terms of the history, in terms of all of the different groups involved, the politics, even just the matter of Zionism, right?
Yes.
And all of the different strains of Zionism that contributed to Israel, and the fact that prior to, one of the things I didn't know until very recently is that there was a meaningful, obviously not dominant chunk of Zionism prior to the establishment of the State of Israel that was anti-state, the Jewish Labor Bund, I believe they were called. And they were very much spoke out during the Nakba, spoke out against the ethnic cleansing, said, this is only going to come back on us. Like, this is going to lead to more violence. This could, this will destroy us if we keep doing this. We're just going to wind up doing to Palestinians what was done to us in other parts of the world. And that kind of evil will come back on us. I think one of the quotes was, your state will destroy our nation. So there was even within kind of the Zionist movement, because, and I think this is one of the things, Zionist movement, generally we translate that as Jewish people who believe they should return to Israel and have a state in Israel. There was a chunk of it where it was more of a spiritual thing. I think Jewish people should move to and live in Israel, but we don't need to have a state. I think we just have a right to also live in the land of our ancestors. And there were a number prior to the establishment of Israel of Palestinian citizens, prominent citizens, who were supportive of that. In fact, the Hebrew University in Jerusalem, which was the first college, you know, it predates Israel, but it was the first college in Israel, was established with a grant from a Palestinian family who were supportive of the idea of, like, of course, come back here. Like,
once you start making it, like, I mean, an ethno-state, what's the conclusion of that? Like, what does that lead to? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's that sort of thing I feel like should be more obvious.
Yeah.
But it's not.
And while all of that is incredible, there's a complex history of how we got here and what's happening. But again, what we're seeing right now is also quite simple.
Yeah.
You know, and how did this conflict start? Well, by the forced eviction of hundreds of Palestinians from their home. That's
yeah,
how this started.
Sheikh Jarrah. I mean, that's this most recent. That was that
this most
and
recent.
I think it
yes.
was a. My understanding is it was a mix of that, the evictions and Sheikh Jarrah, and a right wing nationalist Israeli march on the Al Aqsa March.
Yes,
it was kind of
yes.
both of those things.
But also pointedly, that, you know, yeah. yes. Yeah, but with a purpose. And this, you know, yeah. the results of what's happening are not unexpected from those choices.
No.
From those, you know, so we know what's happening. We see it. This is, you know, the culmination of a lot of complexity, but also very simply a purposeful action from the Israeli government.
Yeah. What's happening is, I think, very intentional. I think the people who, I think there were a lot of people involved in the Israeli government and involved in different sort of also civilian kind of militant Zionist organizations who knew that this would provoke more violence, which would bring more Hamas rockets, which would justify a vastly greater Israeli military commitment, which would further, it would kill more Palestinians, it would force more of them to leave Gaza, it would make it less inhabitable, it would further, you know, the ethnic cleansing that's been going on since 48 earlier. I mean, you can even trace it back earlier with.
And we would
parts.
Allow it.
Yeah, and we would allow it because we always will. It is important to note we haven't always been Israel's main military backer. The Soviet Union actually contributed a hell of a lot to the establishment of Israel in 48, and although they stopped supporting them pretty quickly, it was the French for like 20 something years after that who sold them the advanced weapon systems. We didn't really start giving a lot of gun shit to Israel until like the late 60s. And then after Nixon left office under Gerald Ford, froze because of Israel did a bunch of illegal shit. Ford temporarily froze military exports to Israel. And that is what led to, because this was happening when Netanyahu was starting to get prominent and was like starting to work as essentially a PR man for the Israeli embassy. That really led to a dedicated policy from the Israeli government of building sympathy with American civilians to make it politically impossible to freeze military aid to Israel. And it's been extremely successful. They're the PR wing of the Israeli government, whatever you want to call them, is exceptional at what they do. Yeah,
they're really good at posting.
Yeah, they're great posters.
Some good memes this week.
Mm-hmm. The interesting who noted this recently. They're very good at posting about how much they fear for their lives and things in English and posting about that kind of thing. And then whenever they post in Arabic, it's sort of mocking the destruction that they engage in.
Like that one. What did that meme say? I never looked it up. Of the
there was a before
explosion.
After.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blowing up of the building with the Al Jazeera.
Yeah, and now we have, you know, even now there's more resistance to this and like our relationship and support of what's going on. But you have even now like Biden eventually calling for a ceasefire, but the specifics
or
of it.
Not even calling, supporting it.
Supporting
He's,
it.
Like, on a call with Netanyahu.
He's saying it sure would be nice if everyone stopped shooting at each other, but
it's
I
like,
will take no.
Well, right.
Do you think
also
you could have it in your heart?
Yeah.
Because the clarification is that supporting a ceasefire if both parties are open to it.
Yes.
Which and is like not
vetoing
a
the UN resolution
worth considering if you actually believe in stopping violence. Like I think the violence should stop if both of them if everybody wants it to.
Mm-hmm.
And you know there are old quotes of him talking about how if Israel didn't exist we'd have to invent Israel for our interests.
Yeah, I mean, and it's one of the angles of this propaganda campaign is this, because you'll see a lot of like gay Palestinians will like speak up against what's happening, and people will be like, well, if you were in the state that Palestinians want, you know, you'd be executed for being gay. And the idea and the kind of corollary to that is, well, Israel's much more, you know, is just like a normal Western country in this. Gay marriage is illegal in Israel.
Yes.
They recognize it if you get married outside of Israel.
But you cannot get married there.
And I'll also note, given how progressive a huge chunk of the Palestinian liberation movement was, had there not been all of these years of violence and this free feeding frenzy for the religious right among the Palestinians, perhaps that situation would be doing better. It certainly hasn't been helped by what Israel's done.
We have to take a quick break, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
you know
yes.
who also recognizes gay marriage?
Whoever.
Product.
Lone Star Beer.
Lone Star Beer? Well, yeah.
What do you say, Shinerbach?
Shinerbach, I think, is pretty woke.
Okay.
Shinerbach, gay as hell. That's their motto.
Welcome to the worst year ever. We'll get through it together or not. Everything is so dumb, 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 dumb.
Ah, we're back.
We sure are.
We're back. Good. And I'm drinking my favorite queer beverage, Lemon Lime Twist Zevia.
Delightful.
Ooh, refreshing.
One of the best flavors, I think.
Oh, it's so good. Just had a nice long run with a dog I'm fostering, and it really hits the spot.
Really? A nice little soda pop to rehydrate yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I tried to give some to the dog, but he's a dog and doesn't understand soda. Mm-hmm.
And not good for dogs, but it's a good choice.
I think Stevie is good for everything, Katie.
I don't know. Where have you read that?
In Stevia.
Did you write that down and then read it?
Advocates Monthly? Yes.
It's terrible for my digestion whenever I eat something with like fake sugar. Oof.
Oh,
anyway.
But this isn't fake. It's real.
It's a plant.
Sugar.
It's a plant.
Fake.
I know.
Exactly.
But
it's sweet. It's sweet enough. That's
maybe
all you need.
I can give Stevia another chance. Anyway, enough about that.
Enough about that.
Enough
more
about that.
About other things.
Awful. Yeah, it seems like it's going to continue. And I mean, they leveled a hospital earlier.
They killed the head of Palestine's COVID-19 response, decorated neurosurgeon, and his entire family in an airstrike.
Awful.
There's just a lot of
and they blocked the road with an airstrike. They blocked the road to the hospital with an airstrike first, which some might call purposefully targeting medical.
Just a lot of war, sure war crimey.
War crimes.
We're having. Yeah, it's in the ballpark.
In the ballpark.
They're having hospitals, the press. Apartment building.
Yeah.
Sure seems like not targeted at Hamas, but at the civilians.
And it's just the same old sort of like people. Approach. Because, like, you get like, okay, like the, I mean, the human shield thing is so frustrating. Mm-hmm. First of all, like, Israel uses human shields as well.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those questions where it's like, okay, so you're saying it's you, Israel, are saying that you can strike these civilian targets because military targets are embedded them. Well, your entire civilian population are basically veterans or active service and can be called up to serve. Does that not make every civilian target in Israel also a military target? Mm. If that's not the argument I would make, because I don't think it's good to strike civilians. But
yeah.
if we're judging Israel by the same standards they're judging Palestine, then yeah, what Hamas is doing is just fine, is Jim Dandy, by the standards Israel's using in their own strikes.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to see that, the sort of justification like that, and just sort of, like, waving, you know, it's even, like, progressed, like, okay, well, it's human shields, well, they know they're human shields, therefore, like, it's okay, maybe they're asking for it, maybe they're doing it on purpose, and it's just, like, it's just a bizarre, disgusting way to talk about civilian casualties, when also, it's like, personally, I would say don't shoot the human shield.
Yeah.
Yeah. Here's a thought.
I would say, you know, one of the things about having the Iron Dome and having incredibly advanced first class military hardware and doctrine is that maybe you should be able to protect your population without massively leveling an entire city. Like, if Israel's response to all these rockets was to hunker down and defend their population and then maybe blockade roads afterwards and stuff, and they weren't launching missiles, they would have a lot more sympathy.
Yes,
then
they
would. Then
it would
be like, oh, look, only one side's firing rockets. We're just using our... That's not what they would ever do.
Right.
No, they want them to fire rockets. Yeah. They want them to fire the rockets so they have a reason to disproportionately react.
Yeah, it's massive retaliation. You know, and it's... the whole situation is just, it's very frustrating. It's very frustrating. And like, I've been thinking a lot about how effective Israeli propaganda has been in the United States, because I was subject to a huge amount of it when I was a kid. I can remember in school learning about the 1973 Yom Kippur War, which was framed as the same thing as like the 1948 war. All of these Arab nations simultaneously invaded Israel and we're going to wipe it out and kill everybody. And they, through sheer stick-to-itiveness and gumption and courage, managed to fight off, you know, against incredible odds. And I recently watched a really good documentary on Al Jazeera called The October War that is very even-handed, talks to a number of veterans on both sides, and for the very first time realized, like, oh, they didn't win that one. Like, that wasn't a victory for Israel. Egypt, actually... Like, the Syrians definitely lost, but Egypt kind of won. They took land back, they defeated Israeli forces in the field and fought them to a standstill elsewhere. I had come around to the Palestinian side of things before, but I still had never thought to re-examine the basics of even what I learned about military history in that region. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons, one of the things the Israelis have done that's very smart when it comes to propagandizing to Americans is they focused on the military dimension of things. Because if you just are paying attention to the active fighting, it's hard not to be sympathetic to the Israelis because they have a fascinating military with really interesting doctrine that has been very successful for interesting reasons. And they if you're a military history nerd, even without thinking about like why the fighting is happening, right and wrong, it's easy to just kind of tunnel into learning about the strategies and the different things these special forces units have done and like how they were able to so successfully destroy the Egyptian Egyptian and Syrian air forces during the Six-Day War. All that you can nerd out over all that stuff and kind of without thinking wind up sympathetic to Israel without ever considering what also happened, what happened in between the wars, why the wars were being fought, the degree to which things like the years of attrition and all these kind of like insurgent campaigns the Israelis waged against their neighbors like fed into it. And it's very smart because Americans see soldiers who look like our soldiers and cool military shit. And a lot of us won't think about anything beyond that, even though if you were to strip what's happening in Palestine of its locational context and just describe the fight to the average dude living out in the sticks, they would be sympathetic to the Palestinians because they're the underdogs. They're the people
just
being
look
oppressed.
At the map.
Yeah, just look
just
at
look
the map.
Just look at the map over decades and decades.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a two-state solution is even possible?
Jesus, I don't. I mean, I think
is that too big of a question?
I think the existence of states is a big part of the problem here.
Sure, sure.
Right.
But like, how does?
Well,
this...
two states would just make an official war between the two states, right? They would just cause more. Like it, this this idea of states is like part of the problem, I'm not gonna say like I know how to solve it. But
yeah,
that's
very...
not, yeah, that's just not a thing that I think is, it exacerbates the issue in my opinion
in that way of thinking about it.
If I'm being asked like what I think could improve the situation, some of it would be an end to the legal justifications for apartheid. Mm-hmm. There are a bunch of Palestinians who are Israeli citizens. They do not have the same rights as Jewish Israeli citizens. Change that. Give Palestinian citizens the right of return the communities they were kicked out of. Make it illegal to have these villages and other communities that are Jewish only. And there's a bunch of them in Palestine, often in villages that were Palestinian villages taken over during the Nakba. So I know, like, and obviously that wouldn't solve everything. That wouldn't maybe not solve anything, but I think just from a basic stance of what's the right thing to do, stop selling weapons to Israel. Mm-hmm. They've got enough weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, make it like kvetch at them as an international community until they actually give Palestinians equal rights under the law. And see where that goes. It seems like a good place
step
to start.
Step one, no apartheid anymore.
Yeah, I would say end apartheid. Like it is, I don't know how to solve the whole problem, but ending apartheid and no longer giving what is already a first class military power tens of billions of dollars in military aid. Those two things seem pretty simple and doable. And then we can kind of see what happens.
Yeah.
But you know, I think you have all these, you know, this such a long old conflict and such a history, and to try to solve it by doing the same old kind of thing seems like not very helpful. And ultimately the borders we make are meaningless, the way to move forward is to become closer together, and not to be crass, fuck each other and like live your lives and just like, you know, generationally, every generation.
Change.
By the way, the Israeli government heavily restrict, heavily like it, miscegenation is like legally discouraged, basically.
Right, exactly. Every generation gets closer together and more accepting, and all these sort of the history and the conflicts will melt away, as opposed to being like, well, now you got your country, you got yours, everything's fine. It's just like building a wall between something, and then it gets worse and worse and worse over years.
Everybody's gonna get mad at me for asking that question, but it is the thing that people keep talking about, and I love this conversation and where it's going.
You know, I think one of the things that is used to shut down productive discussion about what's happening in Palestine is, well, how would you solve it? And if you don't have a ready-made solution, like, okay, well, how do you make the two-state things work? Well, the Palestinians aren't going to. How do you agree on things? Like, okay, let's take all of that out of the equation. Let's stop the Israeli state from being an apartheid state. Let's remove the legal restrictions on Palestinians, give them a right of return at least equal to what Jewish Israelis have. Mm-hmm. And that's a thing you can do. I don't know how to solve the whole problem. I don't know how to fix what is now 75 years of escalating violence and ethnic cleansing. But I know where it starts, and it's by not having apartheid legally codified in law. Mm-hmm. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah.
And we know what hasn't worked.
Stop apartheid. Stop the settlements and the occupation. It's illegal occupation, internationally recognized as an illegal occupation.
Stop the illegal occupation. And again, it's one of those, you don't have to know how to fix the whole problem to fix some of the problems, to fix the most obvious problems.
The glaring problems.
It's not a justification for allowing the atrocities to continue.
Yeah.
Well, that's often the game with stuff like that, right? It's to sort of like, well, throw your hands up, though, because you can't tell me step by step every single thing that should happen. So throw your hands up and consider the issue unsolvable and just let it continue.
Yeah. And that's what the people who benefit from the situation as it currently stands once. It's the same reason why they will try to get people to stop talking about the issue if they don't have a complete and scholarly grasp of the entire history of the conflict and all the different sides, is because the goal is the longer you delay any kind of productive discussion, the more people you kind of frighten or discourage from participating in the discussion or from urging things one way or the other, the longer this all goes on and the more accomplished the ethnic cleansing becomes.
It's called cancel culture.
It's called cancel culture.
And we hate it.
We hate it, folks.
I think this we could take did an we ad solve break. It?
You know what?
I don't know if we solved it, but canceled. I think we could take an ad break.
you know what does know how to solve the crisis in Palestine?
Star beer?
Is it Lone Star beer?
No, absolutely not. I'd be willing to bet you if you asked Lone Star Beer's opinion on the situation in Palestine, it would get pretty racist and like comprehensively racist. Like Lone Star Beer definitely supports Israel, but in a way that's racist.
Yeah, in a very in a way that's very obviously racist. Mm-hmm.
But we still would take their ad money.
I bet Lone Star Beer wants Israel to exist for the rapture, right?
Yeah, that's probably, that seems like a Lone Star Beer kind of thing. Lone Star Beer invested a lot of money in trying to breed that special cow that they can sacrifice on the Temple Mount in order to ring in the apocalypse. So, buy their beer!
Welcome to the worst year ever! We'll get through it together, or not! Everything is so dumb, dumb!
We're back.
Boy, are we.
We're solving it. We've did it. We've done it. It's
happened. We've solved the crisis.
We did what Jared couldn't.
What did Jared Kushner do?
He fixed
the Middle East.
Well, that was Trump, right? Trump was the guy whose call it was to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Move the embassy. Maybe it's Jared's idea. Who knows?
He did win an award.
Jared,
that doesn't seem right.
Least fuckable man in America. Boom.
Okay.
Roasted.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what brought us.
Are you saying you'd rather? So if you're saying you'd rather fuck Donald Trump than Jared?
God damn it! There's no way to win this category.
Or Donald Trump Jr.
Sorry. All right.
Or Eric Trump.
He did not win.
You have to admit that Kushner is more fuckable than Donald Trump and Trump Jr. And
have you seen him in those shorts?
That is not an invitation.
He is more fuckable than all of the Trump boys.
Is that really something to be happy about?
You're the one that brought it up.
I know.
You gave him the award.
I was just trying to be funny. It didn't work out.
If Gene Hackman, theoretically, if Gene Hackman were to gas attack an entire Walmart and then strap the people in the Walmart with bombs and force me to have sex with either Jared Kushner, one of the Trump boys, or Donald Trump himself, in order to save the denizens of that Walmart, I would pick Kushner. If that was the choice I had to make.
Yeah, if that's the choice.
That's objectively the right choice.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't enjoy it, and I would take my vengeance on Gene Hackman, even more readily than I'm already planning to take vengeance on Gene Hackman.
Kushner.
All I was just trying
Kushner.
To say, not a babe.
Mm-hmm. Not a babe. Certainly no.
Certainly not a babe.
Not a single member of that administration even verged on fuckable.
What about Mnuchin?
Oh, what about Mnuchin?
let's be fair. Come on.
Especially Mnuchin,
let's be
Cody.
Fair.
Especially Mnuchin. I mean, God.
We've all got our tastes, and my taste is Mnuchin.
The closest to fuckable in that administration was Mike Flynn. Because he's out of his goddamn mind, and that's kind of hot sometimes. Mm. You know?
Yeah, you never know what he's gonna do.
Yeah, that lunatic sex. Oh boy, that
nobody's
honestly
gonna,
believes
nobody's
he's
going
part
Spicer?
Of.
Nobody.
No, absolutely.
Spicer hangs out in the bushes.
It's really hard to be imagining all these people having sex right now. It's unwitting.
I don't even think Spicer lightened the mood, guys.
Like Sean Spicer isn't even a virgin because calling him a virgin would imply the possibility of him having sex.
Yeah. Well, sorry
it's
for
not
ruining
on
everybody's
table.
Appetite. Mm-hmm. Carry on. With your
God, imagine like going to a party and it's one of those things where you've got to eat sushi off of somebody's body, but it's Sean Spicer.
Oh my God.
Oh, I know. Horrible. Horrible.
Or like Stephen Miller.
Oh.
That was bad, Katie. That was bad.
God. Yeah, I imagine the fish would spoil as soon as it touched Miller's body.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
He's part of the problem here in Santa Monica. He walks in the ocean and all the fish rise to the surface.
That's right.
That's exactly right.
To the topic that
we went real far off. My bad.
So Jared didn't solve it. We did.
We did. Did we?
No, absolutely not.
No. No one has solved it.
No.
But yeah, I don't know.
Apartheid.
As we record this, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed 4 Palestinian protesters during demonstrations. 2 Palestinians were killed during the general strike after they were shot in the chest, and another protester died after being shot in the head. The Palestinian Red Crescent says its teams have treated more than 150 people in Jerusalem and the West Bank, including 35 with live bullet wounds and over 80 from tear gas inhalation. The Palestinian Authority says that Israeli forces have killed 24 Palestinians in the West Bank since May 10th. 26 Palestinians were shot by live ammunition near an illegal Israeli settlement, Beit El. And of course, a lot of the violence is being done not just by paramilitaries, you know, by paramilitaries in at least one case wearing fucking Punisher skull patches and really kitted out like fucking Proud Boy types. Because that's, I mean, there's a huge amount of interchange between those communities. You're seeing these groups, these paramilitary groups in Israel being allowed to do a lot of things that our own paramilitaries want to do. But in the case of Israel, what they're doing, I mean, there have been some of these people have been arrested for shooting Palestinians, but not most of them. And it's only going to get more extreme because that, I mean, for one thing, Israel has the most conservative young population in the Western world, like incredibly strong right wing, basically a non-existent left wing, about 8% of the electorate. And that's one of the things when I think about, like, how can this actually get fixed? International condemnation could, I think, matter, especially if it led to economic consequences and a lack, a cessation of weapons being sold to the state of Israel. That would have an influence. But at the end of the day, most of the Israeli population is broadly supportive of what's happening. And I don't know how you fix that. That's the thing that's scariest, is how comprehensive a lot of the Likud party, which is, you know, Netanyahu's party, the right party, how comprehensively they dominate a lot there. And it's not to wash away the dissidents within Israel. In fact, there was just this weekend, a march of, I don't know, it looked like 100 or so Israeli anarchists marching against the violence in Gaza and the West Bank. And there absolutely is a peace movement within Israel, but they have been basically for 20 of the last 25 years been getting their asses kicked electorally. And I don't know how to turn that shit around.
I certainly don't.
Mm-mm.
I do. You know, no, I don't.
And one of the problems is like the fact that you have to serve in the IDF, which inculcates a lot of people into that culture. And also, like, I knew the first Israeli guy I ever like befriended, this dude named Yoni that I met in India, had just like wasn't sure if he was ever going to get to go back, if he was ever going to go back home, because he had fled the country to travel around the world rather than join the IDF. Like, he was
that's enough to keep you from being able to go back.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, you would have, he would have to serve a term in prison or something. Right. I don't actually know what wound up happening to him, but we hung out for a few months. And it was one of those things, I did not have a particularly strong political understanding, but the way he framed it was just like, I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do the things that I would have to do if I was in the IDF. And this would have been, right around, right after Operation Pillar of Defense, and right before Operation Protective Edge. And so he was just kind of, you know, a dissident, but also because, you know, what it takes to be a dissident there, I think, is part of why it's hard. You know, you're giving up a lot to you know, not just in terms of like the fact that you'll have to do time in jail, but like you're so marginalized. Again, it's like 8% of the electorate, and that's a lot to ask somebody to do. Most people don't have that kind of moral courage in any society. So I do, like, I have nothing but the greatest respect for those Israeli anarchists marching against their government, you know, that yeah. takes a lot of
bravery.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
is that it for us today?
Have we resolved it?
I don't know. We should talk. We were going to talk a little bit about Gates, right? We could end this on Gatesgate, a little bit of
a fun note, some jokes, some japes.
Yeah, I mean, we could also end with the joke that Biden told today about Israel and Palestine.
You mean that Trump shit he pulled earlier?
Yeah,
I didn't see this. I've been...
So this is from Matt Visor, White House reporter for The Washington Post. So he tweeted this out earlier today. Biden's been at a Ford factory test driving their electric vehicles, right?
Uh-huh.
So he was test driving one of them, was like an electric Ford F-150. As Biden was test driving a Ford F-150, reporters asked if they could inquire about Israel. No, you can't, he said, via pooler Alex Thompson. Not unless you get in front of the car as I step on it. I'm only teasing, Biden said. Okay, here, we ready to go? Here we go. Ready? And then he floored it.
Through the crowd and over people.
Very good. Very, very fun. Funny man.
We love our funny president.
We love...
Don't we, folks?
We love our funny president.
Our sweet...
Biden.
Sweet guy.
It's just like...
The most progressive president we've ever had.
I mean, he's certainly in a lot of ways, he is the most progressive president of my lifetime.
We just talked about this on the other show. Yes, he is, but also other things. What were you saying, Sophie?
I'm saying, what use is it that our president is test driving cars? I'm sorry.
I mean, what use was it for Trump to get in that truck and scream like a big boy?
So many questions.
That was the only thing he did I liked, because his attitude is exactly what mine would be driving a similar car. I'm in a big car.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I kind of liked when he walked onto Air Force One with toilet paper dangling off his shoes. I like
when he stared at and pointed at a solar eclipse. Literally, when someone screamed, "Don't look at it!"
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
I know you're right. Now that was our funny little president.
I liked when he left.
Yeah, that was good too.
That's good too, yeah. And
let's talk about Gatesgate. Which is different from the Bill Gates gate.
Right, different gates.
But both of them do probably involve sex with underage women.
Yeah.
A lot of overlap here.
Yeah.
The person you kind of might suspect.
Looking bad for our still in office Gates.
Ooh.
I mean, it's one of those things. A lot of like folks further on the left have been like saying this is part of the, you know, you have the kind of blue QAnon shit where people are expecting Trump to go to prison and, you know, all of his family, and like this wave of arrests that are never going to come.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I think he'll probably continue to get sued. He may lose a bunch of money as a result of lawsuits. Nobody's putting him in prison.
Nope.
It's not going to happen. It should have happened, but it's not. And people are lumping in what's happening with Gates to that. Like, oh, he's never going to actually get arrested. And I don't know that I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that there seems to be quite a bit there. And
he
the guy
absolutely might. Yeah.
Like his buddy flipping on him.
Yeah.
It seems pretty significant. I don't know. Like that's I get the, you know, obviously like most people don't face consequences.
No, and I get the desire to be like, don't have any hope that that will happen, because you probably, I mean, but it really does seem like he's in some trouble.
It really does. And he's just like flying through it. He's just like posting. It's like nothing's happening, but it really
that's
does seem like
blows my mind.
Well, that's the move, right? That's the move that usually works. You post through it. You say the lying media.
The big eye roll.
But I don't know. Is your buddy lying too? Are the Venmo receipts lying?
Venmo receipts don't lie, Cody.
That's
there
true.
Seems to be, and I've you know, maybe it'll wind up that he doesn't. They can't catch him on actually having sex with a minor. Maybe there's just not any way to prove that. But like, it definitely looks like he was trafficking women. Like he was paying for sex and transporting people across state lines to pay for sex, which on its own carries some time. Not that I think it should be illegal to do that, but it is.
And he would certainly publicly say that it should be.
Yeah.
Wanting, you know, he rails against you know, mandatory, like he wants mandatory drug tests for anyone getting welfare and things like that. Well, you're doing drugs, buddy.
Yeah, he's definitely doing a bunch of coke and shit and ecstasy. Yeah, but like the stuff coming out has been fun because he sounds like all of the worst people I partied with when I was 20, but he's in his 40s and in Congress. He's in his 40s, right? Yeah.
Kushner or Gates?
Yeah, Kushner.
Kushner.
Yeah, I think Kushner. It has to be.
Kushner. Yeah. We'll get him a trophy that says most fuckable person and the least fuckable group of people ever assembled.
Oh, that's nice. That's a nice award. That'll be good for
maybe
him.
We could do some sort of merch along those lines, huh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, this sucks. World sucks. But I love you guys.
I have hope he'll go to jail.
I hope so.
For exchanging money for naughty favors, as he phrased it.
Yeah, for naughty favors.
That's just the example of him not pretending to not take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is one of the few cases where it's like, maybe he's not going to get through this.
Yeah.
He's doing all this America First stuff with Marjorie Taylor Greene, where it's like, okay, that's the only person who's like willing to like chill with you anymore. Yeah, I don't know.
Ew.
I don't know why.
All right. We did that.
Just ew. Can we just end it on ew?
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew. Ew indeed.
Ew to ethnic cleansing. Ew to Matt Gates.
Ew to you.
Big thumbs down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But you guys are some big thumbs up.
Big thumbs up.
Listeners, y'all rock.
Put that thumb up there.
Oh, the listeners.
Shove that thumb right on up.
Yeah, get that thumb in there. Wiggle it around.
Broadly pro.
Yeah, because it's so good. It's a thumbs up. What are you talking about?
And ew.
There.
Everything's so dumb, and it's gonna get dumber.
Great.
I tried.
Yes.
Daniel?
Lovely.
Worst Year Ever is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.